from Tukito LLC. It's Keto Woman Podcast with Daisy Brackenhall.
Hello, keto lovelies. I'm Daisy Brackenhall, and I've spent most of my life struggling with my weight and confidence, and have always had a difficult relationship with food. Even when I finally got to my target weight, after weight loss surgery and eating low carb, I couldn't maintain it and I was miserable. Keto has given me the freedom to fall in love with food again, without the constant gain, loss, guilt, virtue cycle of before. Health and happiness is where it's at now, running on fat. Welcome to the Keto Woman Podcast. Each week I'll be chatting to inspirational women, maybe even the odd man, to discover the secrets to their success so that I can share them with you. So what is keto? Keto is a way of eating that enables you to switch your body's main fuel source from sugar to fat. Who doesn't want to be a fat burner, right? But how do we achieve this? A great place to start is by keeping carbs to 20 grams or less per day. So things like leafy greens and above ground vegetables, plus some nuts and seeds, and the incidental carbs you find in things like dairy. Moderate protein, scale to your lean body mass, and then fat to satiety. Once you're in the swing of things, you can tweak it to suit you. Make your own personalized keto. I'll be asking my guest each week what their keto looks like to show you just how flexible and fabulous this way of eating can be. I'm not a doctor, and most of my guests won't be either, so we can't give you medical advice. It's always best to work with your own doctor because they know you and your medical history and so have access to the bigger picture. This week's extraordinary women are Kim Gadraj and Amanda Owakison from Diet Doctor. Kim discovered low carb around 5 years ago after experimenting with various ways of eating, including juice fasts and vegan diets. The fantastic energy levels and disappearance of cravings convinced her that low carb was a lifestyle that could really benefit her long-term health. She studied an MSc in international development with a specialization in food security and nutrition in 2014 to 2015 and moved to Bolivia to work with food provision systems and poverty reduction. However, she continued to research low-carb diets passionately and, noticing the lack of good information on low-carb in Spanish, she set up a blog to translate information for Spanish-speaking people. In August 2017, she attended Low Carb USA in San Diego, where Andreas Enfeldt mentioned during his presentation that he was looking for someone to launch Diet Doctor in Spanish. She applied for the position, got the job, and in October 2017 made a move to Stockholm, Sweden to take up position as head of the Spanish Diet Doctor site. She now continues to run the site and also works as an editor and writer on the English site dietdoctor.com. Kim is really happy to now be working full-time on what has been a real passion for several years, helping other people change their lives with low-carb too. Amanda is a writer for the low-carb site Diet Doctor and has been following some form of low-carb or keto diet since 2014, but it took a long time for her to get it just right. Before that, she simply avoided starch and sugar as much as she could, but didn't calorie count. Her success story has been featured on the Diet Doctor website, and the link can be found in the show notes. Amanda is currently really interested in mental health and keto, gut issues, body image and body acceptance, and whether we should restrict protein on a low-carb diet. So many people end up on the Diet Doctor website when they are starting out on low-carb or keto, either because they have been sent there by somebody else, or they simply find it heading up a Google search as one of the most popular sites out there. So it seemed obvious to ask Kim and Amanda to come on the podcast to give some advice and encouragement to people starting out on low-carb or keto. You will know me well enough by now to know that I will, of course, be pitching in with a few ideas too. Welcome to the Keto Women Podcast. We've got Kim and Amanda here today from Diet Doctor. How are you doing, ladies?
Good, thank you.
Good, thank you.
So I thought today, with you both being from Diet Doctor, which is probably the number one place that people get sent to when they're starting low carb and keto. I thought, who better to speak to but you to give some advice to our listeners for those who are just getting started. So without further ado, let's jump in. What's the best place to start? Why don't we start with you, Kim?
We were talking about this with Amanda, and I think we might end up saying slightly different things. So that would be interesting. I think that it's pretty important just to get a little bit to grips with the basics of why you are actually restricting carbohydrates in your diet. I think that really helps with the motivation, because we get very used to these foods. They're also very often comfort foods for us, this bread, pasta. It can be very difficult to just eliminate them from your diet. But I think if you have a good grasp of why you are doing that, it makes it easier to stay motivated and really push through and do it. So that's, we have a couple of really good guides on Diet Doctor. We have low carb for beginners and keto for beginners, and we'll give you the links. And that kind of just explains to you the basics of why you are doing that, about restricting your carbohydrates, lowering your insulin levels, and putting yourself into fat burning mode. And then starts with the basics of how to go about changing your lifestyle.
And presumably then you made the difference there between low carb and keto. It's really, I imagine the difference they're talking about is just how much you're restricting your carbohydrates.
Yeah, exactly. So on the Diet Doctor site, we talk about three different levels of carb restriction. So there is strict ketogenic, which is below 20 grams of net carbs a day. And then there's moderate, which is 20 to 50. And then there's liberal, which is 50 to 100. So some people prefer to just go straight strict keto and restrict down. Other people prefer to start off trying with a more liberal low carb diet and see if that's effective for them. And if not, then keep restricting down, down, down. Some people, if your only goal is to lose a bit of weight, then maybe you're okay on a liberal low carb diet. If you have a metabolic condition like type 2 diabetes or another condition that you want to use a low carb diet to treat, you might be better off restricting straight down to below 20 grams a day.
So presumably that's also where your thinking about why you're doing it comes in, because it depends on your context, doesn't it? How far you need to go with carbohydrate restriction.
Yeah, I think so.
I think another interesting point is that not everyone knows what a carb is, right? And it's everything from, it's pasta, it's rice, it's potatoes, it's sugar, fruits, and also some vegetables. I mean, all vegetables have some amount of carbs, but we differentiate between above ground and root vegetables, I guess.
Even the above ground vegetables are carbs, right?
Yeah.
It's just that they have a much lower carb content.
Mm-hmm. Of course, yeah, there's lots of debate, isn't there, about, you know, as soon as you throw out that word, carbohydrates. I was just looking last night and the furore of comments that came up about a diabetes.co.uk post where they were basically saying that carbohydrates aren't essential. So, you know, protein and fat, both essential to the body. We absolutely need them to survive. But on the non-essential side, that's where carbohydrates are. They're not essential for us to survive. We can make them through gluconeogenesis ourselves. And people just basically completely lost it, because yes, of course we need carbohydrates, you know, we don't. But basically, mm-hmm. you might want to eat them. And there's all sorts of reasons why you might want to, and why you might find that they work well for you, for your digestive system, all sorts of things. But you're very right, Amanda, in saying that a lot of people, A, don't even necessarily know what a carbohydrate is, know what the difference is between protein, fats and carbohydrates when it comes down to specific foods, and knowing that, you know, quite often there are all three in a specific foodstuff anyway. So it's, but, and then to differentiate the different kind of carbohydrates and the different sort of levels of how problematic they are, I suppose. And you have some great infographics, don't you, on the Diet Doctor site, telling you a bit about that with arrows taking you from one side to another, showing you, you know, which has got more and which has got fewer carbs in all sorts of things like vegetables and exactly. different types of carbohydrates.
I think we have some really great visual guides. I think that's what you're referring to with.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we have a few guides showing 20 or 50 grams of carbs in two different ways, because you can do a low carb diet or keto diet and still eating like a tiny piece of bread, but maybe that's not what you should strive for. Maybe it's better to eat plenty of vegetables to get minerals and everything you need.
Yeah, I like that one, because you can see on the one hand you have this plate with this tiny piece of bread, and on the other hand you have this plate heaped with all of these healthy low-carb vegetables, and it really shows you. I think those visual guides, you're right, Daisy and Amanda, are really good for beginners, because they really just show you in such a clear way. You just have to glance at it and you can see which foods have more carbs, which foods have fewer carbs. And we have visual guides for vegetables, fruits. I think we even have a sweeteners one now, because people were asking us a lot about these artificial sweeteners. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's a really good resource as well. And you can find it on our site just by going to the top menu and clicking on visual guides, and they'll all come up for you.
Perfect. Yeah, I always say they're the kind of thing that's great to have and actually print out and stick on your fridge, something like that.
Yeah, definitely.
I think they're great, those. At the conference we were both at, Kim, in London, there were some great visuals like that. Dr. David Unwin put up some tables that had the number of teaspoons of sugar in. He compared bread, and then there were things like fruits and vegetables and all sorts of things with how many teaspoons of sugar. And I think something like that, like you were saying, two plates with how much food you can have or how many teaspoons of sugar are in this particular food, that really brings it home to people. Because sometimes often when it's just written down, or someone's being bombarded with all sorts of information, it can be a bit sort of overwhelming and a bit, well, I don't really care because I just want that piece of cake. Mm. But if you can be given something that says, okay, I understand you want that piece of cake, but actually what you're doing is eating 10 teaspoons of sugar or something, it's a bit more hard hitting, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Now, of course, on the other hand, everybody's different, right? This is the thing. We always talk about how for diet, everybody reacts differently to a diet. Everybody behaves differently in terms of their personality. So some people may just not want to trawl through visual guides and bits of information, finding out what it is. Some people just want to do it. Amanda made this good point yesterday when we were chatting about it. Some people just want to start and experience for themselves what results they would have. And we actually do have a get started challenge, which is really cool. You can just sign up to our 2-week challenge. It's free. And then you get an email every day kind of motivating you and giving you some helpful tips. And you also get all of your recipes and meal plans and a shopping list. And so it's really, if you're a beginner, but you don't want to kind of figure out everything that you have to do beforehand, this just puts everything in place for you and tells you exactly what to do. And then you can just even follow it without knowing necessarily too much about a low carb diet. You can just do it and see what results you get.
Oh, fabulous. That sounds like a great resource. So we're going to have, we're going to have lots of links in the show notes by the sounds of it, you'll be able to find all of these. Okay, so I'm just starting out. I think it's coming up to the weekend. I'm going to have my last weekend of freedom before I sit down and start my low-carb ketogenic diet. What would you say to me? What's that first week going to be like? How am I going to get through that first week? What's the most important thing that I need to think about getting started on Monday morning, Amanda?
I think in general, when you're starting something new that you don't know that much about, it's really important to have the right mindset. So just having an intention to get started and not being afraid to mistakes, I think that will get anyone really far, and you will learn as you go. I mean, I've been eating low carb and keto since 2014, and I learn new things every day. And sometimes you can read information on the internet, but it doesn't really stick until you do it practically. So yeah, mindset's really important.
That's a very good point, actually. Things do change as you go, and most people, I imagine, if they think back to that first week or their first month, they're probably doing things very differently a year down the line. So not to worry about it too much, just get started. What about you, Kim? What would you say to me starting on Monday?
I am finding more and more how much mindfulness and that kind of thing are important. So just pulling a little bit more on what Amanda was saying about setting intentions, I think that's really important. If you know that you're going to start something that's going to be a big change for you, just take some time for yourself and really be introspective and consider why you are making this change, and also take responsibility for it. It's very easy to just suddenly get into a social situation and get sort of ungrounded and fly away and just have something without really thinking about it, because you have kind of lost touch with yourself. So I think it's really important just to take that time at the beginning and realize that you are the one who's decided to make this change, and you are doing that for yourself. And yeah, everybody kind of makes mistakes along the way. And that's okay. You will get back on track. But in terms of kind of cheating and that kind of thing, I think, yeah, it's just really important to remember why it is that you're doing what you're doing, and you're doing it for yourself. And that comes from a very compassionate place for you to be doing that.
Yes, I think that's a good point, actually, just to be kind to yourself as you go, because things do come along to mess it up for whatever reason. And if your first instinct is to blame yourself, then it's just going to get worse, and you're less likely to think, oh, okay, well, that happened today, it's not the end of the world, just get back on it tomorrow. And it's not even a case of, you know, I've seen people say, I was so good for the first 4 days, and then, you know, there was an office party or something, and I just couldn't help myself, and now I've got to start all over again. Or someone might say that when they're 2 weeks in, and you're not starting again at all. You've already started. You're just getting back to it the next day. Because I think if you get into that black and white and blame mentality, it's very easy to say, well, I've messed up now, so I might as well pack it in. Or that office party might have been on a Thursday, and you think, oh, well, actually, someone invited me out to drinks on a Friday, so there's no point, I might as well let it go. And then Friday, and then it's the weekend, and then maybe you'll start again on Monday, or maybe you won't. So yeah,
for
I like
sure.
that.
I really think that black and white thinking and perfectionism is like, it's the highway to losing motivation. So you're very, yeah, what you said is really true. And I've been, when I started, I think I really had this mindset, and it wasn't, I felt quite restricted. But now I've learned to see all the gray zones, so to speak. Yeah.
It's quite easy to get into that mentality to start with, though, isn't it? Because there are lots of groups and lots of sites that are very rigid in how they're telling you to approach this. and can get quite knocky with you if you do something that doesn't fit their plan. So, you know, I've seen people posting something. So they're very proud of themselves for their day's food. They think they've done it according to plan, and they'll post it, and there's a few slices of carrots on there or something, and they get shouted out, well, that's not keto, or, you know, watch out for the carrots, you've messed up. And they're like, well, you know, what's going on here? And instead of approaching it with that, with compassion, like you say, it might just, it's that difference between pointing out things where that people might not have realized, rather than telling them they've done it wrong. Because so many people, and I think women especially, really take those kind of things to heart and end up just saying, well, screw it all, I'm gonna try something else, I'm gonna go on a slim fast shake diet or something instead.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Some of these Facebook groups can be so nasty, and I think that's a good tip also. We can just point that out as a good tip for beginners. If you're in a forum or in a group and you can see that you're being treated in a way that's actually judgmental, just to ask yourself, is that really good for your progress? Is that really helping you along your way? And maybe just be very, very careful with which forums you choose to actually participate in.
Yes, I was going to offer that to you actually as one of the questions. And the question was, everyone seems to be telling me something different. Who should I listen to? And another one was, people keep telling me I'm doing it wrong. You know, what do I do? How do I get it right when everyone's telling me something different? And I think that comes to that, doesn't it? That if someone's not making you feel good, then that's probably not the group for you. And there are so many groups now. There are so many groups, so many sites, that there will be another one out there for you, won't there, that will treat you right.
Definitely.
But I do think there's a warning there. There are, you can fall into some sites that actually go too far the other way. And a friend of mine, Kim Howerton, talks about cheating. I don't like the word cheating at all. But she does talk about that mentality where you're basically enabling people to go off plan, and that's not actually being compassionate. That's actually just helping people go down the wrong path. So I don't know. I think it's a very tricky balance, isn't it, between being supportive with somebody who's gone off plan because they've been to an office party or whatever it is, and enabling that behavior that's going to end up being problematic for them. How do you approach that? Because I know it's something I find very difficult.
I think maybe when you start out to avoid that, I think it's important to really keep things simple. Have a few recipes that you know are low carb and just rotate them, you know, just do, yeah. Maybe it's eating meat and eggs and vegetables and some, you know, added fats for satiety. I think that's a really good idea.
I also think that key here is the guilt factor. So we, in order to be healthy, and I also don't like the word cheating, but in order to be healthy, we want to be following a healthy plan as much as possible. And sometimes people will go off track. The reason why people might have gone off track is this is also the problem with being good, you know, being good on your diet and being bad on your diet gives a lot of responsibility to the individual. And we talked a little bit about this, Daisy, in the last podcast. A big reason why people often go on track is the food environment around is crazy. We're surrounded constantly by processed packaged food that has been specifically designed to make you crave it and specifically designed to give you a very specific reward response in parts of your brain. So it's about guilt. You know, you might go off track, but it is really hard. It is.
There's a lot of pressure, isn't there? Like you say, from the environment, but also from friends and family and just other people, what's available at restaurants and all sorts of things.
Yeah, these social situations. So I think the key is, yes, we do want to avoid enabling people to kind of go off track. I think we can do that by just setting the gold standard as following this healthy lifestyle and removing that blame when people do go off track. And that will kind of help them feel supported and just get back to their healthy lifestyle as quickly as possible after that pitfall.
Yes, I think that's the thing. I think you're much more likely to get back to it more quickly if you haven't got that critic sitting on your shoulder. You know, you've done it wrong. I knew you were going to mess up, you know, and you have. And now, so this, you know, it's all gone wrong now. So you might as well give up. Whereas if you've got that kind, compassionate person sitting on your other shoulder, but just trying to, like I say, provide that structure that doesn't go down the enabling path. Whereas, it doesn't, you know, it's not the end of the world if you go out and eat a load of cake, but they're are going to be potential problems with that. If you're the kind of person who has emotional issues around food, just having, you know, a bite of cake might be enough to send you into a complete spiral that's going to be problematic for you for weeks. Whereas another person can have a bite of cake and then forget about it. It comes down to it's the individual, isn't it? And just trying to be in tune with that.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think that goes back a little bit to the question that you asked before about what do I do about all of this information that's going around? And I think we do need to be a little bit wary of people who online find something that works for them and then just assume that that is what works for everybody and then start kind of advocating for this way, assuming that that's going to be good for everyone because it has worked for them. I think really everybody's different. What works for somebody else might not work for you. So it's also about finding this kind of self-assurance, especially if you're engaging in these forums. What works for you? Do you feel good? Have you found a plan that works for you? You can experiment with this and kind of read up and find the level of carb restriction that works for you, what type of carb foods that you specifically might be sensitive to. And then, I mean, that's going beyond a bit the beginner level, right? But as you follow your low carb journey, you will start to find things that work better for you. And then it's a case of just sticking to that and realizing that that is what makes you feel good. And even if somebody tells you that you're not doing it right or that, you know, that's not keto or whatever, if you feel good, then that's fantastic. And that's what we're looking for when we are making any lifestyle interventions.
That's a very good point to remember, actually, that to remember when you're starting that you're going to adapt as you go. So, you know, whatever you're doing in the first week probably won't be what you're doing even maybe in the second week, but certainly in the second month or the second year, it's going to change. And if there's anything that's not working for you, you can change it. There's, you know, there's not a rule book that you have to follow. So what do I need to put in my shopping basket this first week? Because, so obviously I'm being theoretical here, but I love surfing around on the internet and I've been looking at different sites and there've been all sorts of tempting, amazing looking things. I've seen all these amazing keto cakes I can make. I've seen great looking plates of food with steak and vegetables and all sorts of things. And it looks like there are so many different things I can eat. I'm a bit overwhelmed. So, what do I start with? What am I actually going to eat on my first day?
I think it's a good idea to be quite strict and stay away from, you know, keto treats in the beginning. So just focusing on eating really nutrient-dense meat and vegetables and some added fats, butter, coconut oil, yeah.
I have to say that in the beginning, I actually did use sweeteners and I used kind of bread recipe substitutes. I know some people say just to go strict as soon as possible. I had a kind of anxiety for leaving sweet things and leaving bread. And the fact that there were those recipes online was kind of like a bridge for me. It just allowed me to, almost like training wheels on a bicycle, just to have a little bit of hand-holding in the beginning. And then I think ideally we would not have artificial sweeteners in our diet. But for me, they were very helpful at the beginning to just get off the sugar. And then as I continued, I found that I was less and less dependent on those kind of artificial dessert substitutes and things. And now I just really focus on good quality meats, eggs, fish, and low carb vegetables.
I think it's a very good point. It really does. Again, it comes down to being mindful about the kind of person you are and what's going to work for you. And I have, I'm trying to think back. And yes, I think because I have always really liked cooking, I've always really liked baking, I was the same. It was a good way to bridge that gap. It was a good way to get over missing those foods. The only thing I would say, and that's coming from being that kind of person and being that kind of person who does still eat those things. Not all the time, I have to say, mostly because I can't be bothered. Because you think you see a recipe and it looks really delicious and you know you're going to love it. But then you've got to go out and buy the different ingredients and you've got to spend time making it. And actually, when it comes down to it, I often can't really be bothered, but I do make it when I have people coming around for dinner or something. But so I do still have those things. The warning I would give to people are that those substitutes just don't stack up when you're doing a direct comparison. If you're coming from high carb, if you're coming from eating those kind of foods, if you're coming from eating standard bread, standard cake, standard ice cream, all those kind of things, and in week one you suddenly go with the alternatives, they're gonna taste like crap. they're not gonna taste how you think they should taste. But what I've found, and a lot of other people have said, that if you can cut them out completely for a while, in a lot of ways it's probably going to make your life easier, because then if you do decide to go back to have them, you'll have forgotten a little bit about what the carb original tasted like, and they taste really good, because our tolerance of sweetness goes down a lot as well, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So you'll make something and you'll spit it out because it's just too sweet.
It was really funny actually, because I've been strict for really long. I rarely cheat. And then we went on the low carb cruise with the team, and they had all these, you know, keto treats, and I don't do that in my diet, but I decided to try this. It was, I think, bulletproof chocolate fudge or something. Yeah, completely keto-proof, or so it said. And I just, like, something lit up in my brain, and I just, you know, I had to eat three, you know, within 2 minutes or something. And I don't use sweeteners or anything like that regularly. So I think that was a very interesting thing to see, because for me it's so easy to just stop when I'm full and I just maintain my weight. But I guess that if I were to start eating those substitutes on a regular basis, I would just start overeating a lot.
Yeah, it's really true. It's really important to remember that those sweeteners do fire up the same reward centers in your brain. I remember a couple of years ago now, I made a birthday cake for my aunt using sweeteners and nut flours and that kind of thing. And I served everybody a piece, and my dad had one spoon of it and immediately said, "Oh, I want some more of this." But, you know, before he'd even finished his first portion. So it definitely, in an ideal world, you would definitely, I think, just not use them. I found them useful in the beginning as a kind of bridge to keto. but I don't use them anymore in my diet.
It is the trouble, isn't it? That even though they don't have the same, well, some of the same physical impact on your body, as in their, you know, it's not actually sugar, so it's not doing what sugar does to your body, but like you say, it still sets off the same emotional response. It still becomes highly palatable food. I mean, if you have that magic trio of fat, sweet and salt, you know, oftentimes you can just go on eating it forever. And it doesn't matter if that sweet is sweetener as opposed to sugar. It's still, like you say, it still lights up the same bits of your brain, doesn't it? That just says, I want more, I want more. But difficult balance, you know, there are people who are, you know, I just can't get through without having a bit of sugar in my coffee. So for them, transitioning with some sweetener, there's got to be that bridge, that transition for some people. Otherwise, they're simply not going to do it.
Yeah, and we talk about that with increasing compliance. You know, if long term that's going to be what helps you actually stay on track, then it's better than just screwing the whole thing and just going back to your standard Western diet.
Exactly. And I think a lot of people change. I mean, you just said, Kim, that you started with a lot of those things, but you don't really bother much with them anymore.
Yeah, exactly. I did use them a lot in the beginning, but somehow, even though they do fire up your reward centers, somehow I was able to slowly, I just not need them anymore. As you mentioned, with this sweet taste, it got to the stage where even a piece of red pepper was a little bit like, whoo, that's sweet. And so then, yeah, eating an artificially sweetened cookie is just not even a particularly pleasant experience. So it wasn't even really a conscious thing. They just disappeared naturally from my diet. I think the more and more you kind of lower your blood sugar, just eat real food, the more and more your body just kind of resets itself and starts to reject the processed things that deep down it really knows are not particularly good for it.
Your responses do change, don't they? It's like you were saying, I was, that's the thing that I always found amazing, was noticing the level of sweetness in things that you don't think of as being that sweet, like vegetables. And yeah, like you say, things like red peppers and carrots and tomatoes. I mean, tomato sauce, so often when you see standard recipes for tomato sauce, they talk about adding sugar. You need to add sugar to it. When you've been keto for a while and you make a tomato sauce and you taste it, and I've often have to sort of second guess myself, hold on a minute, have I added sugar to this, or have I added sweetener to it, because it tastes like I have. Of course, it's your tolerance, isn't it, that changes?
Yeah, that's where, I mean, I try and tell this to people. Not everybody believes me, but some people say, you know, oh, I couldn't give up sugar because I need my sweet things. I need my sugar. That's really just a physiological addiction, really. It's a strong word, but people don't like being told they have a sugar addiction. But it is a physiological thing. It's not your fault. And honestly, truthfully, staying strict for a while, you really do just reset your palate. And you really do get that sweet taste from healthy foods that are kind of the sweeter ones that are in your diet, like tomatoes and peppers and things. And you really, really genuinely don't feel like you need those sugary things anymore. Like, kind of needing sugar is not part of your personality. It's just a physiological dependence that you can get rid of if you want to.
And it's something, isn't it, that becomes very apparent in that first week for many people. And people often refer to it as keto flu. I like to just call it what it is. Carb withdrawal. Because people often say, oh, keto's making me feel rubbish, you know, I feel absolutely dreadful, this keto diet is not for me because I've got a headache and I just feel awful and my cravings are out of control. Well, that's not keto doing that. That's the carbs, that's the sugar that's doing that, and the withdrawal from it. And that is once you see it for what it is, I think it's a good way of highlighting exactly what you were just saying, Kim, about being addicted to sugar and how much people don't realize they're addicted to sugar. And I think it's worth, you know, preparing people a bit for that. And what do you do to advise people, you know, how to best get through that if they're, you know, if they're feeling rubbish, if they get the keto flu?
I think it's really important to just eat real food and eat plenty of real food the first week. Don't attempt fasting or anything. Just get through the week. Yeah.
Yeah, I second that. Just any time that you feel hungry or you feel a sugar craving, just prepare yourself something nice and healthy and satiating and nutritious. Because the more that hunger builds up, the more likely you might be to give in to those cravings for something sugary or something that's a processed carb.
Yes, I think just having things ready. So that's where it is worth getting prepared for that first week, getting things ready in the fridge, getting snacks that you can have when you're at work, any time that you know you're likely to get hungry, you know, that sort of 3 o'clock time in the afternoon or whenever it is, having something that's quick and accessible that is compliant to the way you're eating is going to help you resist all the other things that you're confronted with that are going to be the ones that you think you want. So having those things in the fridge, having some cheese, having some cooked meats, having something that you can grab very quickly. Also having things, you know, meals that you can prepare for yourself, but having something that you can, when you've got that intense craving that's just taken over your brain, that you can quickly apply to your mouth and eat and try and soothe that craving. What are the things, what are your go-to things that have got you through those rough moments?
I actually just like to, whenever I do cook something, just prepare extra of it. I'm single and I'm very often just cooking for myself. And I mean, if you think about having to cook and prepare your something every single time you need to eat, that's a bit annoying. But so then when I do cook a nice keto or low carb meal, I just make a lot of it so that I have some in the fridge, so that if I do get hungry or I'm busy, I know that I have something on hand that's good for me.
Perfect. Yes. I like my ready meals as well. So I'll definitely intentionally, when I'm making, unless it's one of those, you know, single portions, like you're just cooking a steak. But if you're making, like, I don't know, a pot of pulled pork or something, always make a lot of it. And then especially when you take some time over it, make it, and it's really delicious to have those portions in the freezer or the fridge to come back to, so that you know you can come back from work and you can just pop it in the microwave and there it is on your plate in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
What about you, Amanda?
I just have to agree with Kim. I tend to do that as well and just cook a really large batch and just live off of that, you know, for very long.
I'm very good at being able to eat the same thing all week.
Yeah, me too.
But if you're not, you could just put it in the freezer and cook another thing and alternate. You can, if you get canny about it, you can end up with a real good selection in your freezer.
Amanda's only problem is that she's a really good cook and her boyfriend often fancies the leftovers in the fridge.
Exactly.
That's a problem. That's, oh yes, I'd find that annoying if I had in my head this tasty bowl of something that was sitting in the fridge for me when I came home and somebody else had eaten it. I think I'd be a bit cross.
It happens all the time at my house, but
And what would you say? I don't really like to call them mistakes, because I think anything that goes slightly wrong or off plan is just something that you can learn from moving forward. But what are the common mistakes and pitfalls that you see people falling into?
I think a big one is, and I'm a bit of a crusader for this, so excuse me, but you know, these products, which, you know, especially if you're in the US, there are so many of them, with a package saying low carb pasta or low carb bread. I really think it's important to emphasize that very often when you look at a packaged product, those words that are on the package that look as though they are information, nutritional information, are in reality just marketing. And they're a lot less there to help your health or be compatible with your diet than they are just to sell you a product and get your money. So most of these products, anything that says low carb or things that have a number of net carbs on them, be very careful. The only part of the only piece of information that I look at when I'm deciding if I want to buy a product is the actual chart of nutritional information and the ingredients. And I always choose for a ketogenic diet products that have less than 5 grams of net carbs and also as few ingredients as possible. Some of these kind of like keto products just have this huge list of ingredients, and it's such a shame. It's what the market does. It latches on to this new trend of keto and low carb, and people just want to make money off of it. And so what you end up with is something that originally should have been just going back to what we were supposed to eat, choosing whole foods, eating real food, becomes this big race to take money out of your pocket and produce all of these products that just really aren't good for you. So beware of anything that says low carb, even anything that says healthy on the label.
Yeah.
That is also a marketing scheme.
Almost guaranteed to not be.
Yeah. And I've just published for the Spanish site an article about health organizations that have their logo on the product. They're often taking millions of dollars or euros a year for products to have that logo on them. So also be wary of that. Even if it's a health organization that you trust, it's not necessarily going to be a healthy product. I think that's super important.
Yes, I think whenever the ingredients list is a great big chunky paragraph, that's just something to steer well clear of, isn't it? There shouldn't ever be more than a handful of ingredients maximum on something you're buying. You're basically just buying a chemical shitstorm, aren't you?
Yeah, and another cheeky thing are these sneaky other names for sugar. I think if we don't already, Amanda maybe knows this better than me, but we are about to publish a guide for grocery shopping that kind of lists some of the names that sugar can hide under. People are so clever, or companies are so clever at just using these kind of scientific-y names for something that really it's just sugar as well. So just also to beware of those.
Yes, and again, with the banners they can use, they can say things like no added sugar. They can say things like natural sugars only. But you'll see on the ingredient list that there's something like concentrated grape juice or, you know, something along those lines, which is basically just sugar. Like you say, there are all sorts, aren't there, of cunning ways of hiding what is basically just the fact that they've added a load of sugar to it.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's generally a good thing to avoid in general. It's just something that's overly refined and processed. You know, whether it says it's keto compliant or not, it's probably not going to be a great choice. It's not going to make you feel great. It might be something, I suppose, if you're stuck with that or something that is definitely not keto, it might be the better of the two. But, you know, it's a tricky one, isn't it? Like you say, it's all about these companies making money more than anything else. They're not bothered about your health.
Yeah.
It makes me angry, actually, because, you know, it's a food that says keto or low carb. It's so exciting, actually, to be following this low carb diet and then realize, wow, I can have this pasta because it's low carb, but it's not. It might raise your blood sugar just as much as normal pasta. And it's my pet peeve in this whole movement.
And it's not to say that there aren't a few products out there that are good, because there are some products that someone's either come up with them specifically for keto, or actually they were quite, you know, they were keto friendly to start with. But, you know, it's not to say that there aren't a few good products out there with companies who obviously have got their bottom line to think about, but they are very much thinking about the quality of the product they're putting out.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's where it just becomes very important, just to check the ingredients, check the nutritional information, and also just see how you feel after you eat it. Did you get an upset tummy? Did you start to crave it? Did you get in a bad mood afterwards? I sometimes get in a bad mood after eating some things. And probably that means that it's too good to be true and it's not good for you.
Yes, there's something in there that doesn't agree with you. And I think companies that are really transparent as well, when they're really open with what the ingredients are in their product that they're trying to sell you, you know, the more upfront they're being about it, the less they try and hide it down some great long internet path that you've got to follow to find out what the ingredients are. The more upfront they are about it, the more I certainly tend to trust them. I'm looking forward to it, Keto Fest. Testing Rebel ice cream. I know that's got very few ingredients and it sounds delicious. I can't wait to taste it. So there are, you know, there are companies out there who are making some great products, but like you say, however great they are, you still got to test them on yourself. And what about you, Amanda? What have you seen, either for yourself or for others, that seem to be things that really can easily trip you up?
I don't know if this is really a mistake, but I think it's a mindset thing, and it is to allow things to take time, because we're always bombarded with this, you know, we should get results now. And if it's not, everything that takes time is, yeah, you're supposed to abandon it, you know. But I think that it took a really long time for me anyways to get to know my body and what works for me. Yeah, I just think that's really important to have in mind. If we come from maybe dieting backgrounds, you know, we're used to not being in tune with our hunger, or we've been dealing with overeating and binging. Yeah, it will really take a while to heal your relationship with food and do what's healthy for you, I guess.
It's an old diet mentality, isn't it? We've all seen them. You know, especially coming up to the summer or in the new year, these diets that typically last for 2 weeks, there's something usually, you know, outrageous about them. Certainly some of the diets I did in my teens were just ridiculous.
Yeah.
But they usually last about 2 weeks and they promise you're going to lose, you know, X number of pounds in this time and everything's going to be wonderful. So we have got that mentality, most of us, that goes back a long way with expecting results quickly.
Yeah.
And I do see so many people disappointed, or they get fast results in that first week because they drop their water weight, and then they suddenly drop 5 pounds in the first week, and then they think they're going to drop 5 pounds every week, and then get really disappointed and think they've done something wrong.
Yeah.
When nothing much happens for the next month. But it's changing your perspective, isn't it? Changing your perspective to fixing your body, fixing your health. And like you say, that does take a bit of time.
Yeah.
Wonderful. So we've spoken about lots of things and we've offered a few tips already, but I was wondering if you've got a top tip to leave our listeners with. Kim?
So my top tip for somebody who's starting out on a low-carb diet is, you know, we talk about restricting carbs, eliminating this, not eating that. I would just focus on what you can eat and really enjoy those foods and those meals. You know, there are some amazingly delicious foods that you can have as part of a ketogenic diet, and they're so satisfying, and it's really a pleasure to eat on this diet. It's not some kind of low-fat, low-carb restricted everything that tastes like cardboard. It's beautiful, delicious, rich, tasty food. And so really focus on the positives of that you get to restore your health, lose weight if necessary, just eating these delicious foods, just really see it from that positive standpoint, I think is a really good way to kind of gear yourself up for success.
Yes, that's a very good point, actually. And I, like many people, have done so many different diets. And I mean, it really isn't a diet, is it? It's something that is a sustainable way of eating for the rest of your life, because it is just delicious. You will sit down at every meal and think, yeah, this is delicious food. And yes, of course, there are going to be times when there are going to be things that you miss because you've spent so many years eating them and thinking at least that you enjoy them. And so you're going to miss them sometimes. But yes, focus on all the good things, because there are so many of them, aren't there?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's super important.
Amanda, what about you?
I think just removing sugar, fruit juice, starches. So that's rice, pasta, potatoes, bread. That will get you really far. I think that's just the first step. Remove these things.
Yes, it doesn't have to be that difficult, does it? And it, you know, you don't have to get into a tailspin about finding the perfect macro balance or even getting to a certain level of carbohydrate right at the get-go. I mean, I say this so often, but if with all the problems that at least Western societies have with their health and the national health systems, if everyone was to significantly cut their sugar intake and their refined and processed foods and starches intake, a lot of those problems would certainly get a lot better, but probably go away, wouldn't they? You don't have to become ketogenic straight away if you don't want to.
No, I think there's this concept called the Pareto rule. I don't really know how to pronounce it in English, but it essentially states that 20% of the things you do will get you 80% of the results, right? And I really think this is one of these things. Just get started with removing sugar and starch, and that will get you maybe 80% of the results. And then you can start fine-tuning a few things, I guess.
Exactly. If you're the kind of person that can go in hardcore straight away, all power to you. If you're the kind of person that's got to step it down bit by bit, well, that's going to work too. Whatever works for you. Well, thank you very much, ladies. We're going to have lots of links to send people to the Diet Doctor website. It's certainly a well-used link that I post a lot when people are saying, well, you know, where on earth do I get started? Because it's such a great resource. So we'll have lots of links from both of you to put in the show notes. Thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
To get the resources and links from the show, please go to ketowomanpodcast.com. Are you my next extraordinary woman? Maybe you've got an idea for a show, a topic you want to hear about. Let me know how I can tickle your earbuds by dropping me a line at daisy@ketowomanpodcast.com. If you fancy joining me on this exciting adventure and want to help me create new episodes, please go to my Patreon page at patreon.com/ketowoman, or simply hit the support button on the Keto Woman podcast website. It's thanks to the two keto dudes that I'm hosting this podcast, so please consider heading to their Patreon page at patreon.2keto.com and help them bring you more podcasts like this one. Please help other people hear about and find this podcast by reviewing the show on iTunes and Facebook. Every star and review really does help. It doesn't go unnoticed by me, the people who regularly like, share and comment on my posts. Your support means the world to me. Thank you. This week's end quote is from Eleanor Roosevelt. You gain strength, courage, and confidence by every experience in which you really stop to look fear in the face. Do the thing you think you cannot do. Bye-bye, keto lovelies.